Welcome to the People's Pharmacy. I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. Over the last several years, the debate about health care reform has taken on epic proportions. Some voices maintain we have the best health care in the world. Others say we're little better than a third world country, especially when it comes to taking care of the uninsured. If you ask doctors and patients how they feel about the current system, you're likely to hear a lot of complaints.
Our guests today are two physicians who stopped complaining and have done something different to make the practice of medicine more meaningful for themselves and their patients.
We're talking today with Dr. Pamela Weibel. She's a family physician with over two decades of experience in hospitals and clinics across America. She pioneered the community-designed ideal medical practice, and that's what we'll be discussing today. Dr. Weibel has just co-authored the anthology, Goddess Shift, Women Leading for a Change. And her co-authors on that are Oprah Winfrey and Michelle Obama. Welcome, Dr. Weibel.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Weibel, let's go back to when you were, about 36, and you had worked in six different clinics over the course of a decade, but you weren't happy. You were actually considering quitting medicine. You describe what you had been doing as assembly line medicine. Describe what that was like and what was going on for you.
What that was like was going to work and feeling like a factory worker, like I was hired to be a warm body and just pushing people through a very dehumanized medical system, which also, of course, would dehumanize me. And part of healing in my mind is having a spiritual, emotional, and physical connection with my patients, and that's what attracted me to the field. So essentially, I was asked to just push people through and deal as briefly as possible with sort of the most urgent issue and then have them reschedule for another visit. It didn't lead to what I would consider healing. And it caused some problems in that, you know, I would overextend myself, skip bathroom breaks, and not eat lunch just to spend more time with people. So essentially, I was wearing myself out quickly.
There's a study that suggests when a physician sees more than 10 patients in a day, and I suspect there are most physicians out there, especially primary care physicians, are seeing way more than 10, that there's something that's called empathy burnout. What does that mean?
That means that you reach a point where you're on emotional overload and you can no longer listen to the horror stories and complaints that are coming toward you. The average patient will have 3 to 5 complaints in a visit. And so after 10 patients, you've answered maybe 50 questions, many of which are quite significant, having to do with, you know, divorces and depression and addiction and obesity. And you just reach a point where you tune out. You can no longer take in the information coming. So when the average family practice physician sees 28, 30 patients a day, you can pretty much assume two-thirds of them are being ignored.
Well, we can all see how the medical system has gotten itself to this place. Do you think that other doctors feel the same way you felt?
Oh, certainly, yes. It's just a lot of doctors are unable to extricate themselves for a variety of reasons.
Well, I'd like to hear how you did extricate yourself.
Well, I got out of it by going through it. I really couldn't go on any further, and I quit my job and ended up in bed. I was just quite distraught that I would no longer be able to practice this beautiful profession that I had wanted to practice my entire life. And so I had an epiphany one day. It was quite interesting. On Pearl Harbor Day, 2004, I was jolted out of bed after the 6 weeks of depression with a vision of how healthcare could be in this country. It was quite exciting.
Tell us about that vision.
Well, I just saw patients and physicians coming together in solidarity and creating an ideal medical system, ideal healthcare. And it looked pretty effortless. And so from that, I held a town hall meeting and asked my community to design an ideal medical practice. And I told them that I would do whatever they wanted as long as it was legal.
You actually asked the community, you had a town hall meeting in Eugene, Oregon, and you said, help me design the ideal medical practice?
Yeah, I basically said, you know, hi, I'm a miserable doctor. I'm sure you've met others like me. And I know you all are not very happy about your health care. So why don't we just scrap it and start over? And they gave me 100 pages of written testimony, and it was just so beautiful. They drew floor plans, and I just took all their ideas and ran with them. I got 100 pages, like I said, of written testimony. That became the business plan, and we were open 1 month later.
Oh, my
goodness. It was actually really easy. Yeah, it was really easy.
Tell us about this practice. What are the most outstanding principles?
And what was the executive summary of those 100 pages? What did you learn?
Well, I learned that what people want the most is a human relationship. They'd like to go to a physician that's more like a friend and sit in almost like a living room setting in a sacred, silent place, you know, not lots of beeping and buzzing and faxes and phones and all of that, and feeling, you know, more anxious in the typical doctor's office, but just a feeling of relaxation, of being listened to. So that's the primary thing, just a humanized healthcare model. So the second item that came up quite a bit is an integrated approach. So an openness to all healing modalities, including massage and chiropractic and acupuncture and all of that, herbs and lifestyle. And then beyond that, I think people wanted to make sure that nobody would be turned away for lack of money. Everyone would have the same quality of healthcare and the same attention no matter their income. And the other thing is accessibility, that they could call my office and I actually answer the phone and they get same day appointments and 24/7 access with their own doctor, not somebody randomly who answers the phone that's on call for your doctor. So a real neighborhood Marcus Welby, old-fashioned, trustworthy doctor experience, I guess.
I can certainly understand how that would be the patient's dream. It sounds wonderful. But how does it work for the doctor?
Oh, well, I am the doctor, and it works great. I mean, I've never been happier. The longest I ever kept a job before this was 1.5 years, and I've been doing this 4.5 years with no complaints.
But you have to pay your rent.
Yeah, I do. And the great thing about this is now that I didn't mention this before, but I have no staff. So without staff and being in a very smaller office space, I really don't have lots of rent. I don't have a lot of expenses. So my overhead is lower than it ever has been. And so therefore, whatever money I receive, I keep a larger portion of it. So actually, I can make quite a good salary.
Yeah, I guess, you know, how would a doctor who is looking at your system, how you're functioning, how that compares to the factory system that they're caught up in?
The current system essentially holds patients and physicians hostage to something that they did not design themselves. It was like sort of handed down. And so what I'm suggesting is that we redesign this together, you know, scrap the current model, which 90% of Americans feel that we need to do, and start over by essentially dreaming ideal care. You know, what would it look like? Not just let's tweak this here and there and wait for the government saviors to come descend upon us, but actually communities designing things that work for them. We're all looking for solutions, and the solutions are there if we ask each other. So it's really not rocket science. It's just maybe more of like a human empowerment model of healthcare, you know, how we can recreate it.
Dr. Weibel, a lot of what you've been talking about sounds like old-fashioned medicine, dare I say. I mean, when I was growing up, because I'm such an old guy, the family doctor actually made house calls. I mean, when I was a kid and I had a fever or I had the flu or something really horrible, Dr. Hicks would drive up in his beat-up old jalopy, and usually within a few hours of my mom calling him, and in his little black bag, I mean, he had all kinds of stuff, including shots, because I can vividly remember getting an injection on occasion, but also pills and tongue depressors and all sorts of stuff. And he didn't just run out the door. I mean, he hung around for a while, and you really had a sense that he cared about you as a child. That was really pretty impressive. So it sounds like you've reinvented medicine, but you've done it by kind of going back to the future, so to speak.
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty accurate. It's again, it's pretty simple. What we all want is the same thing. And, you know, when doctors are interviewed in these studies back in 2008, there was a Physicians Foundation study, I believe it came from that study, where they asked physicians what their greatest source of job satisfaction is. And 61% of physicians said it's the patient relationship. 21% said, you know, the intellectual stimulation. But, you know, all of that is there. If we slow down, we actually have a chance to enjoy the developing relationship of trust and the continuity over the years with our patients, you know, meeting their family members, delivering their children. I mean, just being there for generation after generation, which is actually quite beautiful. And then, you know, when you slow down, if they present with an unusual problem, you have the time to reference textbooks or call specialists and get the intellectual stimulation as well. It's just in today's production line model, there's a lack of the patient-physician relationship and the intellectual stimulation because we're dumbed down into these sort of cookbook algorithms and putting everything on flow sheets and computer graphs and charts. And that's really not the experience that most physicians want. So, yeah, I am going back to the old days, the good old days.
You're listening to Dr. Pamela Weibel. She's a board-certified physician and nationally recognized innovator in patient-centered care. She pioneered the community-designed ideal medical practice in Eugene, Oregon. Her patients designed their own clinic. Dr. Weibel has co-authored Goddess Shift, Women Leading for a Change, with Michelle Obama and Oprah Winfrey.
We are going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll find out more about a typical visit with Dr. Weibel, how she treats health problems like cholesterol or high blood pressure, and whether this model would work in other specialties. We'll also hear from a physician in San Francisco who makes house calls.
You're listening to The People's Pharmacy with Joe and Terry Graydon. The People's Pharmacy is brought to you in part by Red X Industries, makers of Utter Cream, Utterly Smooth Hand and Body Lotion, and Utterly Smooth Extra Care Cream Enriched with Urea. They're aids for dry, cracked skin. The number's 800-345-7339, online at uttercream.com.
And by North Carolina's hometown pharmacy, Carr Drug. In every store, there are knowledgeable pharmacists plus the speed and convenience you deserve. Carr Drug, for a healthy relationship, online at kerrdrug.com.
If you'd like to order a CD of this show, you can call 800-732-2334. It's show number 777. That number again, 800-732-2334, or you can place the order on our website. It's peoplespharmacy.com.
We're talking today on the People's Pharmacy about going back to the future. Can modern medicine take a page from a less harried time? Our guest is Dr. Pamela Weibel, a board-certified physician and nationally recognized innovator in patient-centered care. She pioneered the community-designed medical practice in Eugene, Oregon, where patients helped design her clinic.
Well, it all sounds lovely, but I'm wondering if you could give us a concrete example. Walk us through, if you would please, a typical visit with one of your patients, and compare and contrast, if you would, with a typical visit that they would have in some other healthcare setting.
Okay, so if a patient had a problem, and let's just keep it real simple, maybe they have something on their skin, they're concerned it might be cancer. So in a traditional practice, they'd call the office and they would be put on hold. And when they finally talk to a live person, they might not be offered an appointment for several weeks. So now you're talking about somebody who has a little bit of anxiety over a potential skin cancer who now is going to have to sit 2 weeks or so and possibly start crying and have, you know, a little meltdown about they're worried about the seriousness of their illness. And they call my office. I can get them in. I answer the phone and I can get them in the same day, usually within a few hours of when they call. And then it is quite an ordeal just to even get back to the exam room. You're waiting in the cafeteria-style waiting room at a traditional office. You're having to park in a big parking garage and maybe drive across town to get there. You're having other patients who are also very anxious sitting around you in the waiting room. It's not a very reassuring environment, and it's very frenetic. So once you're back in the exam room, then a doctor will walk in and probably look at it for all of 30 seconds and say, you're fine. You know, it's really nothing. So the difference with me is I see them the same day within a few hours. I do the same thing, walk in, probably spend more than just a few minutes because we talk about their, you know, I'll tell them, oh, it's fine, nothing to worry about. It's not skin cancer. Or if they need to have a procedure, I'll actually biopsy it. I do surgery in my office just like any other physician in primary care. But then I'll usually spend extra time talking to them about, you know, how their home life's going and picking up on any other issues that might be going on. So we actually, since my visits are 30 to 60 minutes, I mean, they can be shorter if need be, but, you know, we have extra time after the 30 seconds it takes me to tell them it's normal. And then if the patient is uninsured, you know, they can barter with me, or I think I would probably charge no more than $50 for that visit if it's an uninsured patient. And in a regular office, they would then get a bill that would probably be much more than that. And then, yeah, then they'd spend a while trying to earn enough money, working minimum wage to pay that off. So that's the cool idea when you have a neighborhood doctor that actually lives in your community and you feel comfortable enough to ask them questions just in passing in the grocery store. And no, that's not the right place to discuss, you know, chest pain or anything like that. But just brief little questions can be answered quite easily in just during the day. Yeah. So just really a simplified healthcare model.
Now, what if somebody comes into your office and they've got high blood pressure, or they've got a cholesterol issue, or they've got maybe borderline diabetes? I mean, some of the big chronic conditions that people have. How do you deal with those situations? Because I think in the typical doctor's office, there's not a lot of time. And it's very easy to say, well, if you're depressed, here's an antidepressant. If you've got high blood pressure, here's a medication. If your cholesterol is elevated, we've got, you know, Lipitor or Crestor for you. How would you deal with patients like that?
Oh, I would deal with them and we'd go problem by problem. I'm pretty comprehensive. And then what I try to do is get to the root of the problem. First, I'd listen to them so they could have as much time as they need to explain how they're feeling about their problems. And then a lot of them really don't want to go on drugs as first-line treatment. And unless their blood pressure or, you know, blood pressure is really high, like dangerously high, as in could have a stroke any minute, then I give them the opportunity to try lifestyle. So we do that for a while. And then I can recommend medicinal foods for blood pressure. And we talk a lot about diet and exercise. And they leave with actually concrete instructions, not just, oh, try lifestyle, good luck, which is what I used to do when I was in a hurry. But they actually leave with recipes and special teas that may help them. These are all very inexpensive, and they can try that for some period of time. I tell them to get their own blood pressure monitor at home and call me with some of their readings. And so I give them a lot more responsibility. I treat my patients like peers, like adults. I don't talk down to them. I don't throw pills at them without an explanation of what I'm doing. A lot of people come to me because they feel that they've been sort of shot through a system and disrespected and not given enough information. So I think we just take it at a slow pace and handle each problem in a way that is in alignment with the patient's values, so they actually are compliant with the suggestions that I make.
Dr. Weibel, you are a family practice physician. You've made this work for your family practice. Would it work for any other type of medicine?
Mm-hmm. It works for specialists. And actually, I can't take the credit for creating this, because essentially my model is the model that psychiatrists have been following for years. They don't need a lot of staff, a lot of equipment. They usually have a small little room they rent. And so it's like the type of practice that a current day maybe social worker would run, who's a counselor or a massage therapist or even a small scale chiropractor. So what I'm doing is nothing new. The new part of it is that I've asked the community to come together with me and design it with me. But as far as if you looked at my practice, the no staff model and accessibility and all of that, that's something that's worked for lots of different medical professionals. And I even know a pediatric ear, nose, and throat doctor that's been doing it this way for 10 years with no staff outside of San Diego. And I've heard of an orthopedist, a neurologist. It can be done. The key is to simplify and recreate and recapture that sacred patient-physician relationship, and there's any number of ways that can be done.
You've been listening to Dr. Pamela Weibel, a board-certified physician and nationally recognized innovator in patient-centered care. She pioneered the community-designed medical practice in Oregon, in which patients design their own clinics. Dr. Weibel co-authored Goddess Shift, Women Leading for a Change, with Michelle Obama and Oprah Winfrey. Now we turn to another physician who has a completely different approach to standard medical practice.
Dr. Fugaro, you have been described as a doctor's doctor, a physician who has been recognized by his peers as right at the top of your game. You are a top doctor, according to San Francisco Magazine. So not only do you have the clinical skills, but you must also have the people skills, the ability to communicate with patients that makes you very much in demand. I'm curious how you ended up where you are today. What was your medical practice like prior to joining MD Squared?
Well, those are very kind comments, and thank you. My prior practice to this was a very typical internal medicine primary care practice, which probably most of the primary care physicians in the United States can empathize with. I had a typical patient panel of approximately 2,500 or 3,000 patients. I would see anywhere from 20 to 25 patients in my practice per day, pretty much 4 to 5 days per week, as well as rounding on my patients in the hospital. So it was busy, it was active, and it was very tiring to be doing that sort of day in and day out over a 18-year period, which is the amount of time that I was doing it.
Some people describe what you were trying to accomplish and what so many of your colleagues do as assembly line medicine. I mean, I'm sure it was very high quality, but at the same time, when you have that many patients in your practice, it can be pretty incredible. They have to move through the system pretty fast.
There's no question. I think that moniker of assembly line unfortunately accurately describes what we as primary care physicians feel. We see patients quickly. We have to talk to them quickly. The patients sense that we are always thinking about the next patient who needs to be there, or perhaps some other duties that are calling us in other areas. And many of my patients specifically told me that they felt at times I wasn't there, you know, either emotionally or at least for them in terms of what their emotional needs were. But you're absolutely right. It's busy. It is something that has been done for a number of years in this country. And it does provide pretty good level care, but it's at the price of potentially missing things and certainly at the price of feeling rewarded both in terms of the physicians and feeling adequately treated by the patients in general.
Your current practice, MD Squared, is a retainer-based practice. Would you tell us what that means, please?
You bet. And it's simply a return in many ways to how medicine was prior to the 1970s, when insurance companies began to really get between the physicians and their patients. Patients simply pay me a fee. It happens to be a monthly fee for their care. No insurance companies are involved. The relationship is exclusively between myself and the patients. And for the fee that they pay me, I agree to take care of absolutely all of their needs from a primary care perspective. I see them whenever they need to be seen. I can see them generally on a same-day basis, and they don't have to go through an answering service. All they have to do is to call me directly on my cell phone. I agree to accompany them if they wish to specialist visits, and that's helpful certainly in cases where we're dealing with complex diagnoses. And actually, that part of in terms of accompanying patients to other physicians has been one of the most rewarding aspects of my care, because we as physicians are usually in silos. You know, we don't see how other physicians are practicing in their offices. I've been able to do that by going to surgeons' offices, cardiologist offices, and oncologist offices. And once that other physician realizes that I'm not there to interfere with the care, but to facilitate it and to make sure the communication is clear, it becomes a very rewarding experience for all parties, the patient, me, and certainly the specialist physician.
Now, of course, many of our listeners are going, are you kidding me?
Or they may be saying to themselves, sounds great. How much does it cost?
Well, certainly it can be very expensive. There are various models of retainer-based care that exist in the United States. A pretty common model that exists is one where a physician may only have 500 or 600 patients. They may still accept insurance to some degree and have a pretty modest retainer fee of anywhere from $100 to $200 a month, which is really $4 to $5 a day, which is about what many of us pay for a latte or a cappuccino. Our practice, because of the way we've designed it, has a higher fee because we have fewer patients. We only have approximately 50 families or approximately 100 patients per doctor. But the majority of retainer practices in the United States are the former model that I described, where there's a larger number of patients, but still enabling the physician to pay more attention to patients, to spend more time with them, to have that sort of cell phone immediate access. And in many ways, I think it's going to be something that you'll see more and more primary care physicians turning towards as they get increasingly frustrated with the current state of primary care in the United States.
We'll come back to the cost in a moment, but you've said some very provocative things. So, Dr. Fugaro, I'm going to kind of hold your feet to the fire on this. You said that you see 50 families up to 100 patients, so a family unit or at most 100 patients in your practice in any given year, versus what you were seeing 2,500 to 3,000 patients in a year, or that's the number of patients you had in your practice. Does that fairly describe it?
That's pretty accurate. Absolutely, yes.
And when you say if somebody calls you, let's say they wake up in the middle of the night, it's Saturday night, they're afraid they're having appendicitis, it's acute pain, they pick up their cell phone, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and they call you, and you answer the phone?
Absolutely. I'll give you an example. This happened just last weekend. I got a call late in the evening. A patient of mine was being airlifted to a hospital in Santa Rosa, California, which is about 60 miles north of where I live, because they had had an accident. So I was up at 5:30 a.m., off to see the patient, not even in my hospital, but in another hospital, you know, that was an hour or two away. I helped manage them, helped take care of them, helped coordinate their care. I can do that because I have the time, and it's immensely rewarding to do that. As before, I would simply have to maybe make a phone call and just hear what was going on, while in my current practice model, I can really pay attention to my patients and be really available to them, but not be burned out. You know, I'm not getting calls every 5 minutes. I used to take phone calls from my old practice quite a lot, and that's a lot of people and a lot of phone calls. I don't get nearly as many phone calls now, but basically what I offer as a quid pro quo is that when I do get those phone calls, whether it's at 6 p.m., 6 a.m., 2 a.m., whenever, I'm there, I'm available and ready and willing to help.
What about house calls? I mean, you know, you described what kind of medicine this is, a little bit like what I remember when I was growing up. I mean, our family doc, Dr. Hicks, when I came down with a bad infection, as a kid. I mean, he was there at the house within a couple of hours with his little black bag.
Joe, you're so right. What people describe this is Marcus Welby healthcare, because we all remember that when the physician would come over, would have time to actually see someone when they couldn't make it to the office. And we do that here. It's actually very helpful in many instances to see the environment that a patient is in. We hardly ever get to do that in traditional practices. I can do that. It certainly is more convenient for patients much of the time. And I've truly enjoyed that aspect of my practice. But absolutely, we make house calls all the time.
Tell me a little bit more about that house call aspect, if you would, please. What would you learn from making a house call that you wouldn't know from seeing a patient in a regular office visit?
Well, that's a really good point. What we see is how they're living. Sometimes I found patients who I thought were pretty organized and pretty poised individuals living in very disheveled circumstances, leading me to believe that they actually might have a certain degree of early dementia or memory loss. Or in other instances, patients are at home and I see their medication spread all over the place, and I realize that there's no way that they can be taking their medications accurately or correctly. So there's a variety of observations that can be made, both in terms of actual medical care, but also in terms of their social situations, that really can help me deliver the optimal care that these patients deserve and need.
You're listening to Dr. Stephen Figaro. Now, he is a partner in MD Squared in San Francisco, California, and that's a retainer medical practice. He used to be at University of California, San Francisco. He used to be a pretty typical internist, seeing anywhere from 2,500 to 3,000 patients in his practice during the course of any given year. Obviously, he's changed his practice quite a lot. It is time for us to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk more with Dr. Figaro about the cost of concierge medicine and how this type of practice can help prevent medical mistakes.
You're listening to The People's Pharmacy with Joe and Terry Graydon.
Pharmacy is brought to you in part by Red X Industries, makers of Utterly Smooth Foot Cream, now with shea butter, helping dry, cracked feet feel soft and smooth. The number is 800-345-7339. The website is uttercream.com.
And by North Carolina's hometown pharmacy, Car Drug. In every store, there are knowledgeable pharmacists, plus the speed and convenience you deserve. Car Drug, for a healthy relationship. Online at kerrdrug.com.
To order a CD of today's show or any People's Pharmacy broadcast, you can call 800-732-2334. Today's show is number 777. That number again, 800-732-2334, or find it on our website, peoplespharmacy.com.
Today on the People's Pharmacy, we're talking about reinventing healthcare. Can doctors step off the hamster treadmill and still deliver quality care? We're talking with Dr. Stephen Fugaro. He's a partner in MD Squared in San Francisco, a retainer medical practice.
Now, as you pointed out earlier, this comes at a price. And MD Squared is probably at the very pinnacle of retainer medicine, or as some people have described it, concierge medicine.
Yes.
So if an opening were to occur in your practice, for example, or perhaps one of your colleagues at MD Squared, and I understand that there is a long waiting list, what would it cost me per year? I've seen numbers of $10,000, $20,000, and in fact up to $30,000 out of pocket for this kind of service.
Well, it's certainly going to be expensive. I'm not going to give you a precise number because we just try and not disclose that. But if for an individual, it certainly would be north of $10,000, and that would be out-of-pocket care. But as I mentioned to you before, that is something that is really, we're at the pinnacle of this. We try and provide the ultimate best service that can be given to patients, sort of the four seasons of medical care, if one was to use a hotel analogy. I think most people in most primary care practices that ultimately transition into the concierge or retainer-based model would probably be at a more mid-level, maybe the Hilton or Sheraton, for example. Great service, great hospitality, but not an extraordinary cost.
Who would benefit most from the type of care that you offer? Is there somebody with a medical situation for which this type of care would be especially beneficial?
I'll use a broad generalization and I'll give some specifics. I think the person who benefits the most are those people who really place a very high value on their health care and having it being done in an optimal fashion. It's actually interesting how people of different means, people of different backgrounds, people of different positions in society value their own health. It really varies enormously. So because we can focus, for example, so heavily on prevention and wellness, I have the time to do that. One class of patient that really benefits are those people who are really interested in optimizing their own health care. Even if they aren't particularly sick, they simply want to have the best possible preventative plan in place to keep them as healthy as possible for as long as possible. On the other side of the spectrum, I'd say the other type of patient that would be probably most benefited by this type of care is the patient with complex medical problems, multiple issues, someone who may be even somewhat of an invalid, for example, or someone impaired in their ability to get around, and who sees a number of specialists. Because as you mentioned, Terry, one of the things we can do really is to coordinate care. We can be the quarterback, and I can take the time to communicate in detail with other specialists to make sure that no one is at cross purposes. That becomes very important in an elderly patient on multiple medications, who has multiple medical problems, who is really seeing a lot of doctors. That actually describes a lot of patients in the United States as all of us get older and the baby boomers begin approaching Medicare age.
Well, it certainly does describe a lot of people, and undoubtedly, it describes a lot of people, some of whom can't actually afford your services. Do you have any recommendations for people who aren't able to utilize a retainer-based medical practice but who still want to get optimal care?
I have two recommendations. One would be for someone to really examine their priorities. For many people who might be in the so-called middle class, spending an extra $100 or $200 per month is really not that much of a burden if one considers that's the approximate amount that might be spent on buying a coffee at Starbucks every day. However, there admittedly are some people where that even might be a burden. And then those people, what I say to them is the best way to get optimal care is to talk to, if possible, other physicians to find out which physicians they would recommend. In other words, you want to find out not just from your friends, but you want to find out from other providers who is good at what they're doing, who provides excellent care. And then when you go to that physician, optimize your visits. Don't come in with an extraordinarily long list of issues, but rather, certainly it's okay to have a written list, but make it targeted. Realize that that physician is going to have a limited amount of time. They need to address only several issues, and subsequent ones may need to be put off to another visit. But if you go in there with the idea it's a partnership, you're going to respect that physician's time, that will encourage that physician to respect your time and to get the optimum amount of each out of each visit.
Dr. Fugaro, there is a physician who is practicing what she calls community-based medicine, Dr. Pamela Weibel. Mm-hmm. And she, like you, described her prior life as assembly line medicine, you know, 2 or 3,000 patients in that practice, overwhelming pressure, burnout, not really enjoying the practice of medicine anymore. So she left to establish a different model. Now, she is the receptionist. She's also the janitor, and she does everything else in between. But she says by limiting the size of her practice, by keeping it almost as small as yours, she can provide personalized medicine, and she can make a fairly decent living. So I'm just curious, what do you think about this concept of community-based medicine along the lines of Dr. Pamela Weibel?
I think that's a great idea. I think what's happening in medicine now is you're seeing a number of innovations where physicians are trying to change the way that the healthcare system delivers primary care in order to optimize how patients get care. And initially they're going to begin as niche products or services, but if at their core they're offering something fundamentally useful, they're going to demonstrate their worth and grow. The model that you just described is an interesting one. Basically, a physician strips away all the overhead, tries to optimize the relationship, so basically all that's being delivered is their care and their time. I think that's a great idea. It's simply a different way of trying to improve what most of us would agree right now is a fairly broken system of primary care. And I'm not referring to the healthcare system in general. That's a broader discussion. I'm really referring here to primary care, which over the years, because of insurance companies and other factors, has been chipped away to the point that most primary care doctors are very dissatisfied, and as probably you both are well aware of, a very small minority of new medical students are going into primary care, which is going to really bode ill for the future as all of us age and as we need even more primary care doctors, not less.
Well, here's the problem, Dr. Fugaro. If more physicians do what Dr. Pamela Weibel has done, create smaller practices, serving her patients better and maintaining her own sense of well-being, and more physicians follow your approach, retainer medicine, then there will be even fewer primary care physicians left to treat everybody else. So we might end up with, dare I say it, a handful of doctors practicing in the old way, and they'll have 10,000 patients in their practice. What are we going to do if a lot of doctors get as frustrated as you and Dr. Weibel have become?
That's a common criticism, and one that I would answer as follows. Right now in the United States, almost all of us would agree that we have a real surplus of specialists, a real surfeit of dermatologists, radiologists, cardiologists, and other specialists. The reason for that is that those specialists and those areas of specialties have been very rewarding. Physicians love being in those areas. They certainly receive a higher degree of remuneration, but they also are more satisfied. What we need to do is to create systems, such as the two we've discussed, where primary care physicians feel more satisfied. They enjoy it more. It will then be easier from a healthcare planner's perspective to be able to encourage larger numbers of physicians to go into primary care. If they feel they're going to get a more reasonable wage, if they feel their lifestyle is going to be better, then ultimately, in my opinion, you'll have more physicians going to primary care, which will go a long way toward alleviating the sort of theoretical issues that you bring up, where there's an increasingly shrinking pool of primary care doctors. Right now, we have way too many specialists. And so there is a way of alleviating that problem, but I don't think it's by penalizing physicians. It's by rather offering some incentives to make the quality of life for a primary care physician better.
You've been in an academic center, one of the best in the world, at University of California, San Francisco. So you're a teacher. You're a role model for medical students. You've also been in the trenches yourself. But in your new practice, if you like, in this new world that you have created, you get to interact with a lot of other physicians. And you get to see on behalf of the patient, because you are, in a sense, the ultimate patient advocate. You are not only extraordinarily knowledgeable, but you are also there very clearly for that patient. What kinds of mistakes do you see most frequently when you deal with the specialists who tend to see patients in terms of organs? You know, the cardiologist sees the pump, and the gastroenterologist sees the stomach, but they may not see the whole patient the way you do. So what kinds of complications have you caught and were able to protect the patient from?
Well, certainly, I think there's two types of mistakes that I do see, and the first type is what you're describing, where physicians, because of the natural inclination of their training, tend to focus on their own organ system. And when a cardiologist sees chest pain, they, of course, are more likely to consider the heart as the source of that pain, as opposed to the lungs or the thorax or the ribs or other areas. Not that they don't, but certainly they're more inclined to do that. As a primary care doctor, and certainly given the amount of time that I now have, it's much easier for me to be fairly discerning and really be pretty exhaustive in making sure that when symptoms are being explored, all possible options are being looked at, and making sure that the gastroenterologist who sees a patient with abdominal pain is not just thinking that it could be the stomach or colon. And I do see that. There's no question about it. Specialists are busy, too, and they're focusing on the things that they see more often. But I would also talk about a second type of error that's seen both in primary care doctors and in specialists, and that's errors that are made when physicians don't have enough time or aren't complete. They're not errors made because physicians aren't smart enough. Most physicians are pretty darn smart. But errors made because people don't take the time or don't have the time to explore the details of the patient's care, realizing that they might be on some other medications that another doctor has prescribed, realizing that there might be a prior surgery or a prior medical condition that wasn't initially described by the patient, but is critical to know if you're trying to solve what the current patient's problems are, and a host of other things like that. And it's for that reason that, boy, I have felt so rewarded and so happy doing what I'm currently doing in my practice.
And finally, the long-term consequences of treatment, because there are specialists who look, as we said earlier, to an organ system. So a pulmonologist who's dealing with a patient who has some asthma, for example, or a gastroenterologist who is dealing with a patient who's complaining about reflux, those specialists might tend to prescribe drugs. In the case of the asthma specialist, Advair, as a for example, very, very popular drug. The gastroenterologist may prescribe Nexium and leave the patients on these drugs not for a few weeks or months, but for many, many years, because the patients seem very satisfied and the numbers look good. So right. The pulmonologist sees the FEVs, the forced expiratory volume, the lung function improves, the patient doesn't have any obvious symptoms. The gastroenterologist gets a pat on the back from the patient, says, "Gee, doc, my heartburn's gone. I am so grateful. Thank you so much." But then 5, 10, 15 years down the road, that patient on the Advair all of a sudden develops cataracts or glaucoma. Maybe there's an increased risk of osteoporosis because of the steroids. The patient who's on the Nexium indefinitely may also have problems with osteoporosis. So how do you deal with these long-term consequences? Because those specialists don't see the consequences of their medicine. The pulmonologist doesn't have to deal with those weakened bones or with the cataract problem. But you, as the primary care physician, in a sense, you do have to deal with the long-term consequences. How do you deal with that situation?
Well, you're right. We do have to deal with those, and that's a really excellent question because that's becoming an increasingly common situation in medicine where medications thought to be beneficial, thought to be well-tolerated, after a longer study, we find that there are often unanticipated side effects that are completely different. You mentioned a couple there, the situation with Nexium or Prilosec or other proton pump inhibitors. There's a markedly higher risk of hip fractures and osteoporosis in those patients. Another example was just raised this week. There was a preliminary study showing that patients on statins may indeed have a markedly higher risk of diabetes down the line. something else that we now have to then consider when we're trying to calculate the risk-benefit ratio of putting someone on that medication. The way I deal with it personally, to answer your question, is that I try and become aware of it as much as I can. I try and really stay on top of what's being studied and what's being talked about in various specialties, and then to present the patients with these issues. We work together as a partner. We work together to talk about what we should be doing and not be doing. And for some patients, they're willing to tolerate that risk, and other patients, they aren't. But these aren't certainly black and white decisions, but if one is able to present the patient at least with various therapeutic options and various ideas about what could be done or couldn't be done, it's much easier to make those decisions once they're aware of them.
Dr. Stephen Fugaro, thank you so much for talking with us on the People's Pharmacy today.
Thank you, Joe and Terry. I really appreciate your time.
Well, that is all the time we have today. We want to thank our guest, Dr. Stephen Fugaro. He is a partner in MD Squared in San Francisco, a retainer medical practice. We also spoke with Dr. Pamela Weibel earlier. She is a doctor who pioneered her community-designed medical practice in Eugene, Oregon. Dr. Weibel has co-authored Gotta Shift, Women Leading for a Change, with Michelle Obama and Oprah Winfrey.
Lynn Siegel produced today's show. Peter Bombar is our technical production supervisor. Al Wodarski helps engineer the program. Dave Graydon edits our interviews.
The People's Pharmacy theme music is by B.J. Lederman.
The People's Pharmacy is produced at the studios of North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC.
To order a CD of today's show or any People's Pharmacy broadcast, you can call 800-732-2334. Today's show is number 777. That number again, 800-732-2334. Or you can find it on our website. That's peoplespharmacy.com. You can share your own story or you can comment. You can vote on today's show. Again, that's peoplespharmacy.com.
And when you go to the website, you can also look up things like prescription drugs and over-the-counter medicines.
You can find our favorite home remedies. You can share your favorite home remedies. You can sign up for a free bi-weekly electronic newsletter. It will come straight to your computer.
Or you can sign up for the podcast. You can get it every week.
And that way you'll have the show delivered straight to your computer. You'll never miss another People's Pharmacy show again. And you can share today's show or any show with a friend. All of that's available at peoplespharmacy.com. You can also find us on Facebook. You can become a fan. In Durham, North Carolina, I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. Thanks so much for listening, and please join us again next week. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast of The People's Pharmacy. The podcast is brought to you in part by Red X Industries, makers of Utterly Smooth Foot Cream with Shea Butter, helping dry, cracked feet feel soft and smooth. The number is 800-345-7339. The website is uttercream.com.
This podcast was also brought to you in part by Liprinol, a potent natural anti-inflammatory with a unique combination of omega-3 fatty acids and no side effects, now available in the United States. More information is at LiprinolUSA.com. That's spelled LiprinolUSA.com.